Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. It's a Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament was a huge success, giving back to the Valley in the form of the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. Purdy Insurance will take great care of you and your family and your needs. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Keywords 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up at 3:35, Kurt Smith, who wrote the book Voices of the Game. He's written several books. Last one he wrote was Mercy. Everyone was doing themes on the 100th anniversary of Fenway Park. And so his theme was broadcasters of the Red Sox that worked in Fenway Park. Well, among his beloved group of broadcasters, he will always tell you will be Harry Callis and Whitey Ashburn. And he will be on with us at 3:35 to talk about the legendary voices of the game and the state of baseball broadcasting today. Kurt Smith at 3:35. Kevin, the Indianapolis 500 course coming up on Sunday. New qualifying. You liked it.
I actually did. You remember I complained quite a bit about bump day going away, but the way they did qualifying, I really didn't miss not having bump day. It made cars be able to be on the track the whole time. There was a lot of fighting for the Fast 9 on Saturday. Then they basically erased all the times from 10th to 33rd, and everybody that hadn't qualified requalified on Sunday. Then they ran the top nine again for the top nine spots, and you basically requalified again. It was hectic for the teams, but it was great to watch on television.
Also going on in Center County Court today, the NCAA, Penn State, and the Paterno family in court today. But there was one interesting thing that came out in court today. Twitter from one of the individuals in the courtroom, that Penn State was going to be forced to suspend play, not get a death penalty. What? Who comes up with this language?
Say that again.
That Penn State, it was not a death penalty, they were just going to be forced to suspend play.
Okay. Like SMU was forced to suspend play before they could restart, and the program hasn't recovered.
Yes.
All right. I just wanted to make sure I understood correctly.
Yeah. You sit there, you say to yourself, what is going on here? All right. Well, we'll let them battle it out in court. But that was the interesting nugget out of that today. We sat back, it was sent to me, and I looked at it and went, huh?
Well, that's why I had you say it again. I wanted to make sure I understood it right.
I mean, what's next? Defining what is? Oh, wait, we've already done that. All right.
I know you were kind enough to give me a few, you know, extra seconds there, but there I did have one other piece of news from Indianapolis. Kurt Busch did get in an incident today in turn two, hit the wall very hard. He was cleared, though, and is able to go back out and continue practice as soon as they get the car put back together.
All right. They'll do that. Also, Mark Cuban's going to be the ceremonial starter for the race. The other big news today dealing with racing is California Chrome. I talked with Dick about this earlier today. New York State is the only state that has horse racing in it. that has ever had a problem with nasal strips being used by horses. And California Chrome uses a nasal strip when he races. Well, today, the New York State Racing Association says they're going to allow California Chrome to race with nasal strips. They're going to drop their objection to it, and the horse will enter and will race. So that's big. I mean, I mentioned how every sport needs a star. Well, the sport of horse racing needs California Chrome right now. Now, where's the fight going to come from in 2 weeks from Saturday? It's going to come from, if social inclusion decides to go, that would be one. The other one is Wicked Strong. Wicked Strong may have enough in the tank, especially after not running the Preakness, to go the mile and a half. Dave in Sunbury. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Steve.
Well, how are you, and how was your weekend?
Well, when my team gets clobbered 18-7, what do you think?
Doesn't sound good to me.
Well, especially when you're the ace pitcher. He's got that big contract coming up starting next year.
Well,
such be life. And ain't no good watching a 7-2 hockey game either. When you're running for the guys who got two.
And by the way, and Carey Price, by the way, is out for the series. They announced that today. Carey Price is done for the postseason.
Well, that is a big ouch.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah,
that changes a lot of things.
Well, I called and said something to Kevin. I said, what's the language NCAA? What's with that language?
I don't know. And I, you know, and
cover your tuchus language.
You know,
I don't know what it means.
Too many lawyers got their hands in the pie. That's just the way I view that.
We'll see. This is a long drawn out process.
Yeah.
It's a long drawn out process. That's playing out. It's in the courts now and so forth. But you sit there because they're saying, you know, was Penn State forced to sign the consent decree? And if they didn't, would they get the death penalty and so forth? And there's a process for that. And I think what the lawyer was trying to say was, well, not really death penalty. They just wouldn't be allowed to play on Saturdays. It's suspended play. It's like,
you can still practice, you know. You can't play any games.
I mean, what are you going to do? A series of inter-squad scrimmages? Yeah, it's like, I have 12 blue-white games. What?
You can still get together every day and practice, you know.
Yeah, but talk to Iverson. You know what he thinks about practice.
True.
But hey, that's a mixed bag of all kinds of crap. I'm glad for the horse that at least they came forward right now instead of waiting to the end of the week and or like a week down the road, say, no, he can't run.
Yeah, well, this is good because there are a lot of people who think that 2 years ago that's what kept the Derby and Preakness champion from running because he ran with nasal strips. And then he was scratched the day before the Belmont. I think the morning of he was scratched for a different reason. But,
They
were not going to let that horse run with nasal strips. And it's like, well, I'm glad they're like, let's take this to a human element. For example, we talk about illegal drugs and so forth and steroids that we talk about in sports all the time, but nasal strips is not one of them. In fact, Jerry Rice, as an athlete, played nasal strips all the time because it helped his breathing during the course of games. It's not, okay, that is not your ability to breathe by opening up your air passages.
It would be like blood.
I mean, come on.
His asthma.
I mean, if that's the case, then why let any horse wear blinkers?
You know, Steve, it was my understanding, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that there's no rule against it. You just have to ask permission to be able to do it.
New York State, though, has never allowed it.
Right. But there's no rule that says it can't happen. You just have to ask permission, and they haven't in the past allowed it.
Right. Well, they're going to allow it now, and they know darn well they should because it's ridiculous.
Oh, well, think of how much money they would lose.
Well, it's more than that, though. It's a nasal strip. Okay? It's not like they're going over and saying, vroom, here you go, here's a little injection of fuel, let it run.
Yeah, but I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying if this was not if this was any horse that didn't have a shot at the Triple Crown, would they have been more obliged to go ahead and let him do it? Or would there be more discussion about it? That's what I mean.
Kevin, it wouldn't be a headline.
Well, that's exactly true. You wouldn't know about it. You're right.
Okay. You wouldn't even know about it. I mean, you think it's going to be a headline? Wicked Strong can't run because of nasals. You'd be like, yeah, so what? Okay? But it's a big deal because the Kentucky and Preakness winner, who's been allowed to have it in Kentucky, allowed to have it in Maryland, is not going to be allowed to have it in New York, which is the only state that has racing in this country that doesn't allow it. I mean, come on.
I wonder if anybody from NBC called up and said, hi, yeah, this is going to be allowed. Thanks for playing. Because, I mean, NBC right now has got to be ecstatic.
Yeah, but you know what? I talked to somebody who works, does a lot of work with the networks. And they say that they have so much power is a fallacy. They may have...
Tell that to the guy with the fluorescent glove at Beaver Stadium every Saturday.
No, but okay,
no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I'm making a joke.
Yeah, but when you, but when you're putting, remember we were talking about the pregame show last week,
right?
And the pregame show that we do for football is an hour and a half. Well, one of the reasons that it's an hour and a half is, number one, they think there's interest to carry it an hour and a half, and some of the Learfield properties are longer. I mean, Iowa's a little bit longer, and Iowa's post-game show is definitely longer than ours. But that's where, you know, they can make their money. And part of it is you're trying to make your money back on your rights fee. And so when you see the red hat come out at games and so forth, TV, but you know, when they're paying all that money in, they're entitled to make it back somewhere. So that's why they have designated TV timeouts and so forth, because you have to be allowed to make back your investment somehow.
No, I don't disagree with that.
And that's how you do it. I mean, and NBC is obviously, they put a lot of money into the Triple Crown series and so forth. But I really doubt that the New York, because this happened fast. This was not a drawn out thing. I mean, it happened 24 hours. It was put out there. Within 24 hours, they said yes, and it was done. So I don't think there was a lot of pressure. Pressure builds when it lingers. There was nothing lingering about this.
If this would have been Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, all right.
Right. You're like, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think NBC was like, oh my God. I doubt there was even a call.
No, but I bet NBC was sitting back waiting to see if they'd have to make a call, though.
Oh, of course they Of course they were.
I mean, this means this is the difference between probably about another 10 million people watching this. I don't know. I'm pulling numbers. I mean, this is a big difference because I've seen the ratings for the Belmont, and I can't remember the numbers, but I know it's like a third of what it is when there's a Triple Crown chance.
Look, this is the best horse that's had a chance to win since Spectacular Bid. Because Spectacular Bid hurt his hoof the morning of the race, and Bid was the overwhelming favorite. This is the horse that it's probably the best horse to run to win it, with the exception of Smarty Jones.
And it's got a compelling story behind it, too. I mean, the owners, they're very fun owners to watch in an interview. They're laid back owners. They kind of remind you of everyday type of people.
Laid back, they ripped Churchill Downs. How about that?
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
No, and believe me, take my word. Churchill Downs, let me put it this way. They wouldn't give Ron Turcotte a handicapped parking pass this year. For those who don't realize, Ron Turcotte rode Secretariat. He also rode River Ridge. He actually was a point where Ron Turcotte rode the winner in 5 out of 6 Triple Crown races in 72-73. Wouldn't give him a handicap parking pass. Yeah, please. Really? Something tells me that they treated the California Chrome Group as a group. Yeah, fine. Yeah, good for you. I'm glad your horse won. Now, get out of here. Go to Maryland.
Thanks for stopping by.
So they go to Baltimore and he rips them. On national TV. That was classic. What are they going to do? Suspend him?
Sorry, you can't race here in Churchill Downs anymore. Okay.
That's fine. Guess what? We're going to win the Belmont, and then we're going to go to stud. We don't need you. Hey, they don't call him DAP for nothing, and you know what DAP stands for. Seriously, DAP, you know what DAP stands for, right?
No, no.
Dumbass partners.
Oh, that's what it stands for. Oh, that's right.
No,
I'm sure. Yes. No, I know you're right.
That's what it stands for.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That's right. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street at Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And every Monday, in fact, every Monday since we started this show, Purdy Insurance, they absolutely take the best care possible when it comes to your insurance needs. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. He has written the book Voices of the Game, which is incredible. I immensely enjoyed that book. He's also written a series of books dealing with the broadcasting of baseball. His most recent is one that was near and dear to me, maybe not so much to you. There's so many Phillies, Pirates, Yankees, Mets, Orioles fans, maybe one or two National fans around the area. I understand that. But I grew up in New England. I grew up in New England. Made many a trip, many a trip to Fenway Park. And his last book was entitled Mercy. Everyone had their own angle on 100 years of Fenway Park. His was the people who broadcast Red Sox games that sat in that booth at Fenway Park. And we now bring in the author of that book and Voices of the Game. Very pleased to have with us Kurt Smith. Kurt, welcome. It is an absolute pleasure.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. I'm delighted that you read both of those books. Mercy, which was my last most recent book, was a special book for me. It was dedicated to my mother. And, of course, when it's dedicated to your mom, every word has to be sterling good. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
I thoroughly enjoyed it because I grew up on it. And that's part of the theme of books like Mercy and Voices of the Game. These are people that you're writing about that many of us grew up on. How important is that element, and how much do you take into account that people grew up in these names and their voices?
Oh, I think it's extraordinarily important. I think, and I indulge in stereotype, but I think it's true, men particularly tend to grow to adulthood liking the same things that they did when they were 5 or 8 or 10. Image of men as really little boys, I think, is based upon fact. And the voices that we hear when we're young, and through television, yes, but especially by the wireless, which is the old name for radio, with luck, we never lose, and we certainly never lose in memory. So if you grow up in New England at 8 and 10 and 12, The voices of Kurt Gowdy and Ed Martin and Ken Coleman are embedded into the tender recess of memory. And they are extended members of the family. You feel that you know them better, in fact, than you do some of the members of the Klan. Or as I did growing up in upstate New York, listening to Mel Allen.
Yes.
Whom I write that a florist must have decorated his voice. Or a Dizzy Dean of the Saturday and Sunday Game of the Week, who fractured the English language as no one has before or since. Once saying of a batter, he's standing confidentially at the plate. These are men who, you know, may have broadcast two, three, four decades ago, and yet their rhetoric and their oratory and their marvelous mannerisms and vernacular, they are as fresh as if they were with you just yesterday. It's extraordinary, but it's true. And I find as I talk to people around the country that, you know, inevitably you wind up by telling stories because sports is a storytelling arena, and I think baseball, particularly in baseball broadcasting, is a storytelling game. And the stories that are told, whether they be of Dean or Allen or Ned Martin, or especially Harry Carey, you know, even though you're talking about them on radio, you can sense that the people that you're talking to have a smile on their face. And of how many things can we say that in life today?
No question. My broadcast partner for Penn State football, Jack Hamm, when he worked some worked some Westwood One games, worked with Harry Callis.
Yeah.
And you know what's ironic, Kurt? In my broadcasting class, my sports broadcasting class at Penn State, the very first class, I will ask the students, favorite sport, favorite team, favorite announcer.
Mm-hmm.
The number of students over the last 2 years that have said Harry Callis's name. Now, obviously, they're Eastern Pennsylvania kids.
Yeah.
But to say his name after he has passed on, this is a younger generation. What does that tell you about Harry Callis?
Well, Harry Callis had had a gift that only could have been endowed from God, which I think it shows that the guy upstairs is a sports fan because he obviously cared enough about baseball and football to have given Harry the voice that he did. I remember once I was in Philadelphia hawking one of my books, and I was in the booth with Harry. And in fact, it was the book about Mel Allen, and the title of the book about Mel was simply The Voice, capital T, capital V. Because he was. Mel had the greatest voice, I feel, in sportscasting history.
Right.
And it just hit me. And I turned to Harry and I said, you know, this is an amazing, for me, an amazing moment. Because here I am talking about a book featuring one of the two greatest voices in sportscasting history, and I'm sitting next to the other great sportscasting voice in sportscast history, Harry Callis. And I think that's absolutely true. What Harry could do simply by saying, it's out of here,
right.
And that laconic, marvelous way he had of describing baseball and football, the two great American sports, was really remarkable. And one of the great memories of my life, in 2008, we did seminar at the, or really a tribute at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, and it was sort of like the old Ralph Edwards, This Is Your Life kind of tribute, and it was an hour tribute to Harry Callis. I was the host. He, of course, was the star. We had an hour-long dinner. It was obvious that he was not in the best of health, but he was a trooper as always, always so well-mannered, always so courteous to his and engaging with his public, and just one of the great gentlemen, and needless to say, one of the greatest broadcaster. So I am not at all surprised that your students, being the erudite students that they are, would pick Harry Callis as their favorite of all time.
Kurt, how important, in your opinion, was the chemistry Harry had with Richie Ashburn?
Oh, well, I can tell you, I was during 4 years of their tenure in 2009 through, or rather in 1989 through 1992, when George Bush 41 was president, and I was a speechwriter to him. Things would get nutty, as you can imagine, in Washington with politics. When I needed to escape the political cauldron, I would drive up to Westchester, Pennsylvania, where my relatives had a house in Westchester. And I would literally get out on the back porch and have a couple of cool ones because I knew that Harry and Whitey would both appreciate that fact. And I would simply listen to them. Listen to them talk. Harry Callis and Whitey Ashburn. And they were literally like two guys sitting at the corner saloon, the minister's son and the guy Whitey with the pipe talking, and they were best friends, and it was as if they were letting you in on their private conversation and making it public. And as I write in one of my books, Voices of Summer, where I linked, in my view, the greatest broadcasters of all time, people talk about chemistry. It didn't exist until you really heard it and saw it with Ashburn and Callis, because they made it an art form. It really was art as life. And it was obvious that they weren't simply friends. They were best friends. And you knew it from the moment that you turned on the dial.
And that's where, for me, I've been lucky in both my football and basketball experiences with Jack and also with Dick Girardi. And I tell my class right off the top, I said, it's the one thing I cannot teach you. Okay, I cannot teach you chemistry. I said, it just it happens
or
it doesn't.
And frankly, you can't force chemistry either. It exists or it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Now let's go to the western half of the state.
Yes.
The western half of the state, of course, Harold Arlen's the one that started it. But then Rosie Rosewell developed, obviously, a passionate following. And then Bob Prince took it to another level. Your thoughts on the lineage of pirate broadcasting?
Well, let me entertain you. And it's an art form of individuals, of eccentric individuals, of anything goes. In a 21 to a two ball game, people want to hear anything but the score. So you'd better be able to keep them entertained while the score is the last thing in the world that you want to hear. Rosie Rosewell had one of the most fascinating home run calls in baseball history. He would say, have an imaginary woman by the name of Aunt Minnie,
yep.
And Aunt Minnie would be sitting in her home, and a Bucko broadcast would star Rosie say as a pirate ball went toward the scoreboard in left field or toward the right field pavilion, and Rosie would have a blast going toward there, and he would say, "Oh, there's a long drive toward left field. Aunt Minnie, open the window, open the window." And then he would signal to his aide, who often at that time was Bob Prince, and Bob Prince would literally be standing on a chair with a pane of glass, and Bob Prince would drop the pane of glass on the floor. And, of course, to the listener at home, the pane of glass would signify the window being smashed by the baseball. And then Rosie Rosewell would mourn in his best Irish tone, "Oh, Aunt Minnie, she didn't make it once again." Or else he would have Prince at one time later in the career, he would have a tray of artifacts. They would be nuts and bolts and hammers, and it sounded even more like a pane of glass. So that was a Rosie Rosewell. It was a tough act to follow unless you were Bob Prince, and then it was quite easy because Bob Prince was very probably, I think, the most beloved broadcaster in a given area in the entire history of baseball. Steve Blass, who is a good friend and, of course, an enormously beloved Pirates broadcaster, maintains to me to this day that Prince is the single most important and beloved figure in Pirates broadcasting history, period.
Yep.
And Pittsburgh baseball history, period. Bigger than Clemente, bigger than Mazeroski, bigger than Stargell. Now, that's saying something. And yet, you know what? I would tend to concur. After all, he was the voice of the Buccos from 1948 and officially from 1955 all the way through 1975 when the Pirates made the incredibly stupid decision to fire him, a decision that they rued to the end of Bob Prince's life. And he would say, "We had him all the way of a victory," or "You can kiss it goodbye of a home run," or "How sweet it is," of something marvelous that happened to the Pirates. And he would have the one marvelous moniker after another and signature after another. And he had this whiskied voice. And in his case, it was literally a whiskied voice. And his leading, of course, partner was Jim Woods, another marvelous broadcaster. Prince is in the Hall of Fame. Woods should be in the Hall of Fame. I speak as a member of the broadcast committee that each year chooses the inductees who should be inducted into the broadcast wing of the Hall of Fame. And Jim Woods, to me, is the best number two broadcaster ever to broadcast baseball, and could have been a number one when he, you know, at any point during his career had he wished to. But from 1958 through 69, Woods and Prince were together, and I swear to God, I don't even have to look it up. I am sure they had the biggest liquor bill in the history of Major League Baseball. They drank. They didn't discriminate. They drank before, during, and after games. They drank alone and together. They drank with friends, neighbors, and by themselves. It was amazing. And God bless them, because they were an astonishing team. The best team, I believe, along with Ned Martin and Jim Woods, in baseball history.
Yeah,
so Bucco fans have been spoiled. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I remember the Possum with Ned Martin, and they are still the most beloved crew that they had when they worked together. I think it was only four seasons.
They were wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely wonderful.
Obviously, a guy that Ernie Harwell is someone, you know, he was the only one of the few broadcasters ever, if the only one, traded for. But, you know, people don't realize that when you hear Russ Hodges call Bobby Thompson's home run, that Ernie Harwell was actually the guy that was on TV and had the sense in 1951 that you lay out and let the pictures tell the story. Once he got
Russ Hodges and Ernie Harwell were both broadcasters for the New York Giants.
Yep.
And CBS Television was broadcasting the playoffs. And Russ and Ernie were doing both, and they went back and forth. One day, Russ did the television. The next day, Ernie did the television, and they flipped a coin. And by a happenstance, Ernie got the television for Game 3 of the playoff, the deciding game, and Russ got the radio. Well, it was obvious by 1951 that while radio might be the immovable object, the television was the irresistible force. So Ernie said to himself, "Hot dogs, I've got the big one, television. I've got CBS. And Russ Hodges only had the Giants flagship radio station, WMCA. Well, as Ernie himself said in his own beloved and homespun way, what did I get from doing a CBS television? I got anonymity. What did Russ Hodges get? He got immortality. Because there was no such thing as recording anything that happened back in 1951. There was no videotape.
Right.
You didn't instantly tape anything. In fact, you didn't tape permanently anything, even if it wasn't instantly, because it was only taped through something called a kinescope, which, as you know, is a bulky process in which you get a very fuzzy copy, even if you do tape. And so it was much easier to tape radio, which is why we even to today have the epic tape of Russ Hodges five times screaming on radio, "The Giants win the pennant." And so as Ernie said many times before he died several years ago, he said, "To this day, only Mrs. Harwell and I know that I even did the playoffs on CBS television." And of course, the whole world knows that Russ Hodges did the playoffs on WMCA radio.
Right. Well, today, one thing about today is that for some of us, we have the glory of Sirius Radio. So I am able to flip around. And, for example, the other night when I was driving back from Scranton, I listened to Vin Scully do the first three innings of the Dodgers-Marlins game. Today's broadcasters, there are many really, obviously, very talented people. How much influence, in your opinion, is there on today's younger broadcasters because they've watched a lot of television games as opposed to cutting their teeth on radio?
Too much. Way too much. And baseball suffers, and the baseball fan suffers. Radio and television are very different. Lindsey Nelson once described to me television as basically the camera tells the picture, and you're there, there's the broadcaster, simply to tell a caption. And that's basically it. But on the other hand, as Ernie often said on radio, nothing happens until you say it does. And you are the whole show. You're the star. You're the producer. You're the director. You're the salesman. You're the evangelist. You're the censor if you're Harry Carey. You're everything. And, you know, if you don't say a word to the listener at home, there's no baseball game. So you are the 100% star of the show. And on television, you're there to say the caption. That's it. It's an enormous difference. You can't overstate the difference between the two mediums. And I'm afraid, in fact, I'm certain, that one broadcaster after another has grown up watching television and mistakenly thought, aha, that's the way that you do baseball. Well, it's not the way you do baseball.
Right.
It may be the way you do football, where the action does carry itself, football being the perfect telegenic sport, but it is not the way to do baseball. Baseball is a static sport on television. It's too slow moving a sport on television. If Bud Selig would do one thing to merit his $11 million contract, he would enforce the rules on the book, and baseball would be played in 2.5 hours rather than 3 hours and 10 minutes every day.
Mm-hmm.
But the announcer is there to tell stories and to keep the audience engaged and to avoid statistics and numbers. Ben Scully says that, you know, announcers who depend too much on numbers for support are like the drunk who depends, you know, on the footlight. He depends on it for support and not illumination.
Right.
And I think he's right. Dizzy Dean used to call statistics static, and you know what? They are static. Old Dean was right.
Yeah.
they're not active. They don't engage, and particularly if you're a sport that's trying urgently, desperately to get kids age 10, 12, 8. You don't hook them with statics, I'll tell you that. You might hook them with fast-paced action. You'll certainly hook them with stories, particularly if they're funny. Ronald Reagan once told me that if you tell an audience in a speech 15 facts and one story, and if it's the story is told well, it's the story you recall. Boy, was he right. And he should know, because after all, he once did baseball play-by-play, didn't he?
He sure did.
In the 1930s. And he recreated the games. That is, for those that may not be conversant, he didn't he wasn't at the game itself, but he got play-by-play Morse code over the wire from the ballpark, hundreds of miles away. And he might get in the studio, B-1-0. Well, what does that mean? It means ball one outside. That's all he got. And he had to recreate the game from that, and he had to use the theater of the imagination. And that's what allowed him later on to use those powers of imagination and theater, really, to make the game at the ballpark even more riveting, if you would, than being at the game itself. So I think that it hurts baseball really severely, terribly, in fact, to have baseball broadcasters think that, well, geez, this is the way to broadcast, watching TV. It's not. It's not at all.
I could. I think we've only scratched the surface here, and I hope we can get you back some other time and delve into this even more so.
I talked for 15 minutes just on Joe Paterno. I think he's one of the great, great public leaders of our time.
Well, I think you and I are on the same page on that. I had the privilege of knowing him for 32 years. And
I just want to know why a statue of him is not outside the library that he built at State College.
Well, we'll see.
You could tell me that someday.
Well, maybe in private you and I can talk about that at some point, which would be nice. Because I know that your former boss, former President George H.W. Bush and Joe
An enormous
were very good
admirer
friends.
Of, yes. of Joe Paterno.
Very good friends.
Tell you in private and in public.
Hopefully we can do this again. I would enjoy it very much if you could carve out some time later.
Anytime you want.
Thank you so much, Kurt.
Thank you. You bet now. Yep. Bye-bye.
Kurt Smith, author, Voices of the Game. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.